Good morning. It's 11 minutes before 8 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCEW in Sitka. I'm Peter Apathy, and this is Raven News. The Juneau Empire is no longer allowing anonymous online comments on its website. The newspaper on Sunday removed all previous comments published at JuneauEmpire.com. Now, real names are required to post remarks about articles and to interact with other readers. K2OO's Casey Kelly has more.
The Empire joins a growing number of media outlets in Alaska and nationwide that have ended anonymous comments or done away with commenting on their websites altogether. Publisher Rustin Burton says the move is designed to promote civility and respect in the comments section.
People felt like it was just people were taking it too far online, that there wasn't enough oversight, there wasn't enough accountability. Because these people could say whatever they wanted. It didn't have to be backed up. And it's not hard to take a look at those comments, and you can see that there are people out there that they don't care about the conversation. They don't care about the argument or having a good discussion. They really want to just stir the pot.
Burton says feedback has been mostly positive since the change was announced last week.
The 17 people that really liked the online commenting without putting their names next to it were pretty upset about that. Other people commented online that they were very happy about this. And everyone that I've spoken to in person has been very positive about it. They've just said, hey, it's about time.
The Anchorage Daily News, the Fairbanks Daily Newsminer, and Alaska Dispatch, as well as KTOO, allow people to post remarks through Facebook. The Empire will only allow comments from subscribers. Last year, the paper introduced an online paywall. The same website login that allows people to read articles will allow them to comment.
We wanted to maintain control of the whole thing, and as we talked about it, we realized that the Facebook option still didn't give us the complete control we want. Plus, we were taking them away from our website, and we didn't want that to happen. We wanted the conversation to stay on our website.
Former print and broadcast reporter Brian O'Donohue chairs the journalism department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says systems that require people to attach their real names to online comments, whether it's Facebook or something else, are desirable.
It's the same reason why we quote people by name in the paper. Talk is cheap. When it's your identity by name backing that comment, then I think there's a lot more reason to take it seriously. And there's also a civic value in discouraging just sort of bullying comments from folks that are masquerading behind concealed identities.
The only issue O'Donohue sees with news organizations using Facebook comments is that they tie themselves to the changing rules and privacy policies of Facebook itself. He says the Empire's decision to limit comments to subscribers may have the unintended consequence of limiting discourse.
Traditionally, anybody could write a letter to the newspaper that did or did not subscribe to the newspaper, or perhaps read the newspaper at the public library, or borrowed a friend's copy of the newspaper, or just wanted to express themselves on a topic of public interest to the community.
The Juneau Empire is one of several media outlets in Alaska owned by Georgia-based Morris Communications. That includes the Peninsula Clarion in Kenai and the Homer News. Burton says the company is leaving it up to local papers to decide what to do about online comments. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Wrangell Museum has a lot of stuff. It's chock full of everything from artifacts to taxidermied animals. But there's one unusual thing the museum doesn't have. KSTK's Shady Grove Oliver has more on the search for this elusive item.
Museum Director Megan Clark says something is afoot at the Wrangell Museum. Unfortunately, it's not feet.
My problem here is that I went through our gallery and none of our animals seem to have feet. they all either seem to be just head mounts or they're just skins laying there. So we don't. I'm having a heck of a time finding feet.
That's hard to believe. We're walking through the main exhibit, which is filled to the gills with animals, all of which once led lives of walking, but not anymore.
The condition of the animals in this room are flat. They've all been tanned, and they're just hanging up.
So why all the fuss about feet? Well, the museum runs interactive programs once a month, geared toward families with small children. Clark says she'd like to do some workshops on footprints and animal biology, But to do that, she needs all the parts.
Museums tend to have two different kinds of collections, and one is the normal collection that everybody thinks of, and then another one is a use collection. And so those items are already marked to be handled and damaged and whatnot.
The feet will join that use collection at first and then be added to outreach education kits. Those kits can be checked out by local teachers and homeschool groups for hands-on learning. Since she's got nothing to work with right now, Clark says she's open to any donations from around the state.
I don't need a pair of feet. I can have one foot. If you happen to have a front and back foot, that would be perfect. If you don't, that's all right too.
Clark says she is especially interested in mammals, like bears or wolves. But really, the only requirement is that the feet be from some type of animal found in Southeast Alaska.
Yeah.
Well, you really don't have anything with feet in here.
No, it's really rather frustrating. No feet.
No feet at all, huh? Wow.
I've got lots of birds. I've got lots of fish. No legs.
Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Shady Grove Oliver.
If you have some feet you'd like to donate, you can bring them in person or mail them to the Wrangell Museum. That's P.O. Box 1050, Wrangell, Alaska 99929. For more information, call the museum at 907-874-3770. And up next, we bring you a story from Unalaska about how events on the other side of the world can reverberate here at home. Unalaska resident Mayak Bilkwe is from South Sudan, where ethnic and political violence have claimed up to 10,000 lives, including some of his own family. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports.
It's a cold and snowy winter day in Unalaska. Mayak Bilkwe is bundled up in a windbreaker over a thick sweatshirt and extra tough boots, practically the uniform at this fish processing plant.
Yeah, this is where we work inside this building, the one straight ahead. Yeah, it's big buildings.
Bilkwe has worked for UNICEF for a decade, but every winter he takes off to see his family. Bilkwe's wife and son live in Nairobi, Kenya, and he usually goes to visit them. This year, Bilkwe wanted to go to South Sudan, but the political situation there was tense. The president and vice president were fighting, and soldiers in the National Army were taking sides. So Bilkwe flew to Kenya and waited for things to calm down.
You know, eventually the war broke out in the capital of South Sudan, Juba. So at that point, I couldn't make it to go to South Sudan.
Bilkwe watched as the conflict spread like wildfire. Rebels broke off from the military and fought against it. Some residents took up arms and formed militias. Old tribal conflicts that had quieted down after South Sudan became an independent country just 2 years ago flared back up again. In late December, the fighting reached Ponriang, the remote county where Bilkwe's family lives. It was a quiet time in their village.
The young guys, they were not around because it was a farming area. Nobody stayed there except the elder women.
Bilkwe says a militia from an opposing tribe, the Nuer, has come to the village before to steal food and cattle. He believes the same group came back, this time to fight.
So when they came in, you know, they start shooting people. So they kill, at that time, you know, they kill my mom and her twin sister and the other two sister, four of them.
Another relative traveled up to the village to identify the bodies and those of eight other family members. He called Bilkwe in Kenya, where he was still on vacation, to break the news.
When I heard that, you know, I was, you know, devastated. You know, I didn't know what to do, either to go there, I'm not going to do anything. So I just called people, and then we went to the church, and then we pray. That was the only thing that I did, is just to go to church and pray.
Bilkwe is back in Unalaska now, processing fish for UNICEF. He still works 12-hour days and comes home to a company apartment just like before. He hasn't heard from his surviving family, the men who were out of the village off at a cattle camp when the militia came.
They have run far away. Nobody now in his own place, in his own house. They all ran to the bush.
The United Nations says a total of 700,000 people have fled their homes because of this war. The UN and other aid groups are trying to do something about it. They pressured the rebels who broke away from the military to sign a ceasefire with the central government, but it hasn't lasted. They kept struggling for power, and the fighting started right back up again. Bilkwe says it's not fair to civilians.
Those people who were killed, including my mom, has never, you know, he doesn't even know that government is functioning, is working. He just knows that he's living on the farming area. That's all she knows, and that there is God. But she doesn't know that there is a government.
The farming area in Panrang is near South Sudan's oil fields. The people who live there put up with pollution and occasional violence from factions that want to control the oil. They don't see any of the money from it. But that land is still home. The last time Bill Kwe's mother left the village, the last time he saw her, was about 5 years ago.
I brought my mother to Nairobi one time. When my wife was going to deliver, you know, I called her to come and take care of her because I was not there. So she came to Nairobi and she stayed there for about 6 months. So, and then I left from here, I went there, and then she said, oh, now I have to go back home.
When I ask him what he's going to do, to try to find his surviving relatives or get them out of South Sudan, Bill Kwe politely brushes the question aside.
You know, now this is not a problem of my family right now. You know, this is a problem of for everybody. The people that are being slaughtered and, you know, they don't know anything about it. You know, it's really very painful. There's nothing I can help now, but, you know, we need to speak out, you know, to international community, to anybody that could, you know, help. Is to just give the information of this place out, a place called Panrang.
That's why Bill Kwe is planning to travel there later this year. He wants to talk to people in the county and in his family's village about what happened, take pictures, gather facts about the war, and then he wants to bring their stories home. In On Alaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
And that's all for Raven News for this hour. You can listen to or read Raven News stories again on our website, kcaw.org. You can also read comments on our stories on Facebook. Just click on the Facebook link. No registration or login is needed. Currently 26 degrees under fair skies. You are listening to Morning Edition, Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Thanks so much for joining me. Hope you're having a great day. Stay tuned.